In this first hour of Focus 580, we'll be talking with Robert Wuthnow. He is Endlinger Professor of Social Sciences and also Director of the Center for the Study of Religion at Princeton University. And he has written widely on the subject of religion in America. Just to name a few, his books include Growing Up Religious, Christians and Jews and Their Journeys of Faith, Loose Connections, Joining Together in America's Fragmented Communities, and After Heaven, Spirituality in America Since the 1950s. He's visiting the campus. He gave a talk last night, and we're pleased that he could spend some time with us here this morning. And of course, as we talk, your questions and comments are welcome. All you need to do to join the conversation is to call. The number, if you're in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Go anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. All we ask of callers is people just try to be brief so we can keep our program moving along and accommodate as many different people as possible. But anybody's welcome to call. Again, 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
We know from surveys that Americans feel that spirituality, many Americans feel spirituality has an important place in their lives. There have been many surveys that looked at people's involvement in organized religion, in churches, just asking a basic question like, do you believe in God? And it's something that certainly media has picked up on. And within the relatively recent past, we've gotten a lot of stories about there being something of a religious revival in America. Having said all that, when we do see that people acknowledge the place of spirituality in their life, and when they talk about it being an important feature of life in America, not just today, but historically, what exactly does that mean?
Well, we are a very religious country. We have been from the beginning, and the surprising thing to me always when I look at these surveys that you're mentioning is that many other things have declined, many other things have changed, and yet religious participation remains high. Certainly compared to most other countries, it's high. Spirituality, which people differentiate from religion, saying that it's more personal, more meaningful, less focused on institutions, is increasing. What does this mean exactly for us as a people? I think it suggests that we do recognize that there is some deeper dimension to life than the kind of material world in which we live. And for many people, spirituality is also a way of reaching beyond the kind of consumerist or commercialized culture in which we spend so much of our time.
One of the books in particular that I mentioned is this book that looks at spirituality in America in the post-war era, so since 1950. When you look at the place we are now and try to draw some comparisons between where we are now and where we were at some other time, the colonial period, Civil War, pre-war, are there, do you think, significant differences in the way people approach matters of faith now as compared with the past?
Well, my argument is that there are significant differences, and that one of the ways of trying to understand those differences is to say that currently we focus a lot of our attention on the idea of seeking, of spiritual seeking, and being on a kind of spiritual journey that takes us to different places, that changes from year to year, that may focus on prayer this year and Bible reading the next, and if books about angels become interesting in the popular culture, then we focus on those. So we go from one thing to another, much in the way that that we shop for other things, for goods and services. And that is, it seems to me, different, or at least more pronounced, than the way in which people understood their spirituality 30 or 40 years ago, where it was much more common at that time, and I think, in fact, through most of our nation's history, for people to settle into usually the religion in which they were raised, and if not that, to at least settle into some tradition, and just not think as much about the opportunities to choose other forms of religious expression. So I think that has changed the quality of our religious experience. For many people, it's made it more superficial because they don't really sink roots as much in a particular tradition, but instead shop around and kind of take a casual, sometimes even a kind of quick fix approach to spirituality.
I want to come back to that point for a moment, but something else that you mentioned that interests me, I think over the years I've had the opportunity now and again to talk with people about religious subjects, and these were people that had become involved in a faith that was not the one that they were born into. And this has always interested me. I'm very curious about how it is that happens, how people become involved in very different religious traditions. And in some of these cases, I tried to ask these people, well, what happened? Why is it? And maybe not surprising, the answers aren't very, they're not very forthcoming with answers. And perhaps they really don't, there isn't really a clear rational explanation to give for why something like that happens. I wonder, though, if you have a feeling about that, about why it is there some consistent answer to that question? Why is it that, for example, that someone who was born into a Jewish family should, as an adult, become a Buddhist? Why does that happen?
Well, the biggest single factor is probably one that we could all guess, and that is that you fall in love with somebody from another tradition. And, that is something that's increasingly common because the context in which people date and fall in love and marry are themselves diverse. Typically, we're talking about the college campus. And that means that if you're Jewish, you're very likely to be in a highly Christian context, or if you're Catholic, you're going to be rubbing shoulders with Protestants and Jews and increasingly Muslims, Buddhists, and so forth. And what people do then is they'll either choose to stay in their own religion and their spouse or partner converts, or the opposite happens, or in many cases they choose a third path entirely. So one's Jewish, one's Catholic, they become Unitarian. And then they also begin to do a little bit of comparative shopping in that context, and they say, well, I've always liked certain things about my Judaism, but I'm sort of attracted to certain things about your Catholicism. And as I think about that, they say, well, there may be other things that we could kind of piece together as well. So at that point, they have taken a course, let's say, in Buddhism. And so they say, well, there are some really interesting things about meditation in this context. So it's a process that often doesn't really involve a lot of thought, but it's a kind of process of keeping one's options open, kind of being willing to move, and also figuring that I, as a person, have the authority to make these kind of choices. And that's one of the biggest factors nowadays. You talk to high school students, and they'll say, well, I'm not sure that I believe in God, but I believe in reincarnation. And another one says, well, why do you believe that? Well, it just seems right to me. High school kids somehow feel they have the authority to make these kind of decisions. That's a remarkable development, it seems to me, in our history.
Just quickly, let me introduce again our guest. We're talking with Robert Wuthnow. He's director of the Center for the Study of Religion at Princeton University and has written a lot about spirituality in America. And that's what we're talking about here this morning in the first hour of Focus. Your questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I think some people look at the trend that we've been talking about here and say that it's problematic, this idea that an individual might look at different religious traditions and take some elements from those traditions that appeal to them and put together a multidisciplinary sort of religious package. And I think it concerns some people perhaps because they say that it somehow dilutes all of the traditions. Perhaps also they have this idea that simply isn't the way that you should go about your spirituality, just taking things that you like. Maybe that's the issue, that some people say, well, you can't just take the parts that you like and the parts that you think are hard. Let's say leave those aside. Is it, do you think, problematic, or is it even, can one even say, this sort of going to the mall approach that we now have towards spirituality?
I think the shopping mall approach is very problematic for some of the reasons that you've just mentioned. You know, one of the things you see is that people are very private, very individualistic, but also just private about their spirituality. They don't talk about it very much to other people. They don't get together very much with people in groups. And so they don't have the kind of checks and balances that occur whenever people rub shoulders with other people of similar or, even better, different beliefs. They can pretty much fall into a mode that is self-reassuring, that says, well, you know, I'm struggling with some decision I've made. Did I make the right decision? Well, it seems right to me. And if I'm not quite sure, I'll read something that reassures me that I made the right decision. Religious traditions, all of them, have always been difficult for people because they do raise the hard questions, the questions about guilt or shame or why there's evil and suffering in the world. And so what we're actually seeing right now is that some of the people, maybe 20% or 25% of the people who are these kind of spiritual shoppers that we've been talking about, are eventually coming to the point where they're moving beyond that kind of shopping and say, we need to settle into a tradition once again in order to really grow and to deepen our spirituality.
Hmm. Something else that seems to me to be going on is that more people are at least talking about a need to have some direct, to feel the presence of God, to feel direct contact. And that I think that perhaps one of the reasons that people go looking in other religious traditions is that in the tradition that they perhaps grew up in or spent most of their time in, they're not feeling that. And that's something that they want to feel. Is that something new, that is more and more people saying, I want this direct experience? Or is it that it's just something that we're talking about more?
Well, it's always been part of American Christianity, especially, to want some kind of direct relationship with God through prayer or through a certain kind of mystical religious experience. We can go back to the major religious figures, Cotton Mather, Jonathan Edwards, John Wesley, just to take a few, and they all had that experiential dimension to their faith. So this is nothing that's entirely new. However, the emphasis on religious experience is greater now, it seems to me, than most of the times in our nation's history. One reason for that is that we're not as sure about belief or about doctrine as we used to be. And so we want something that affirms more emotionally or intuitively that we really do have a connection with God. We're not like the Puritans, let's say, who could say to themselves, well, we are among the elect and we know that because of certain church teachings. We have to feel it. One of the surprising things to me, and I look at surveys all the time, and so very little surprises me, but in a recent survey, the question was asked, have you in the past year wanted to feel close to God? 88% of Americans said yes. And almost the same percentage said that they had felt God's presence in their lives. Now, that's a higher percentage by far than people who are members of churches or people who go to church regularly. It's even a higher percentage than those who are sure that God exists, but somehow they felt that they were in the presence of God. That's just remarkable. Hmm. That's one of the clearest signs to me that people really do have this longing for spirituality.
We have a caller to talk with. Let's do that. And if you'll just put on those headphones there, you can hear him. The caller is in Champaign and on line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Thanks for taking the call. Mm-hmm. Probably to touch this a little bit, how religious is the society at large? And that's my first question. And second, have you studied what religion is being readily adapted and why? I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Well, the society is a very religious society by many indications. Church attendance, for example, is much higher in the United States than in any Western European society. Membership in a religious organization runs around 2/3 of the population. That's an extraordinary figure for any society for which membership is voluntary. At the same time, a lot of our religiosity is fairly shallow. We know, for example, from studies we do attempting to relate church going to other activities in people's lives having to do with their family or their work or their ethical behavior, that often it doesn't make very much difference. So we do have to kind of raise some cautionary notes about the degree to which we say that the society is religious. With respect to your second question about the ways in which religions are adapting, let me say two quick things. One is that we are becoming a much more religiously diverse society. Larger numbers of Muslims, Hindus, and Buddhists because of immigration over the past 35 years. And so what we're beginning to see is ways in which the kind of prevailing Christian and Jewish communities are adapting to those newer communities in the United States, and we're also seeing ways in which those newer communities are adapting to American culture. And the second thing I want to say in response to this question is that one of the reasons we are such a religious society is that our religious institutions have been very good at adapting to changes in the economy and changes in the political structure as well as changes in family structure, so that we're seeing new kinds of ministry spring up, small groups on the one hand, large congregations on the other hand. And the fact that we have a very pluralistic religious array ahead of us means that some groups can adapt and grow, such as some of the evangelical Protestant groups in recent years, at the same time that other groups are declining in membership.
The first question the caller asked, if we went out and we did a survey and we said to people, do you now practice a religion that's different from the one that your parents had or the one that you were born into? And then if they say yes, and then we ask them, what is it, would one religion stand out in terms of numbers of converts that it's attracting?
Yes, there are more converts to evangelical Protestant denominations than to anything else. Mainline denominations actually receive some converts, often from people who have risen in social status or have higher levels of education than their parents might have. There's some growth, I mentioned earlier, Unitarians, just in passing, that is actually one of the more rapidly growing groups because it is inclusive. And so people who have an interfaith marriage may be joining that group.
We're getting close to the midpoint here, and I want to again introduce our guest. We're talking with Robert Wuthnow. He's director of the Center for the Study of Religion at Princeton, talking here about spirituality in American culture. He's visiting the campus, gave a talk on the subject last night, and we'll continue just a moment. We also do want to remind you that we're looking for your contributions for the station right now. We're here looking at the getting close to the end of our fiscal year, and we're raising the money now that we will spend on programs next year. That's why it's very important for us to stay on track and make the goals that we've set for ourselves. If you're not yet a supporter of the station, now would be a great time to do it. The number to call is 244-9455. Well, I have two producers for this show, Harriet Williams and Jack Brighton, and these are the folks that, because of their hard work, make this show possible. finding guests for me, lining up guests, keeping things moving smoothly. And Jack Brighton is in Pledge Central right at this moment.
Hi, David. Hi. The number to call, again, 217-244-9455 to make a pledge in support of Focus 580 and all the programs you hear on WILL. You know, this is the kind of show we're doing this morning about religion, spirituality, and American culture that really you couldn't do on commercial radio. And the reason we do it is because we are educational radio, and there's a whole different reason for broadcasting that we have here. And, you know, you just couldn't have the kind of guests. We're gifted to be in a place, the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana, where we have people like our guests this morning from Princeton University. In the second hour, someone from Peru coming through to talk about serious issues and to do a kind of program, like I say, that just wouldn't fly. You couldn't go to an advertiser and say, well, we have this program on, you know, the cultural identity of Peru that we'd like to have you, buy advertising on. They'd say, well, how big is the audience for that? And we'd have to say, well, you know, maybe it's not as big as it would be for Rush Limbaugh, but, you know, there are people who really think about issues, you know, and that wouldn't be very convincing. On the other hand, we can say to you as the listener who cares about this kind of thing, the educational effort we're putting forth, that this is the kind of program we want to do, and we need you to help support it because that's the way we pay for it. So, you know, you need to call us now and give us your direct feedback that this is something that you care about, the kind of program you want on the air. 217-244-9455.
Well, thanks, Jack. We'll talk with you again a little bit later. For anyone who's tuned in here within the past couple of minutes, I want to, and again, introduce our guest. We're speaking with Robert Wuthnow. He is Andlinger Professor of Social Sciences and also Director of the Center for the Study of Religion at Princeton University. He's here talking with us about spirituality and American life. He's written a number of books on that subject, and I'll just mention one. If you're interested in doing some more reading, you might look at his book, After Heaven, Spirituality in America Since the 1950s, and he has several others. Your questions are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call for you, calls on us, 800-222-9455. We do have someone there on that line in Terre Haute, Indiana, line number 4. Hello.
Hello, yes. I'm a psychologist who does research on spirituality in the healthcare system and addressing spirituality. And I guess as a psychologist, I look at this from the perspective of a sort of universal human need, human capacity, and I think I heard you speaking to that. But I'm a little concerned with the perspective of dismissing this searching to different areas as sort of the shopping mall spirituality that is inherently superficial. It seems that that reflects a very real questioning of the assumed religious structures that people have been brought up with. And you did speak to that, but I am concerned that that not get dismissed as a superficial searching.
Well, you're raising an important point, and I appreciate your calling in press me on this issue. What I've discovered is that it really does help to distinguish between two kinds of seeking or two levels of seeking. The one that I've emphasized thus far is the kind of superficial seeking that may be driven simply by the fact that someone is sitting at home, relaxing on a Sunday evening, and it's easy to watch Touched by an Angel, and so some of their interest in angels is sparked, and so they feel spiritual as a result of that, but don't really get involved with pursuing anything very deeply. But the other kind, which you're pointing to, is very much present as well. These are people who, as I've been putting it in some of my own writing, have been driven to seek outside of the established religious structures, because those structures didn't pay attention to the kind of vulnerability and pain and trauma and personal crisis that people were focusing on. And there are a number of people we've interviewed over the years who say, look, I had no choice. I was a victim of abuse or of incest or rape or a dysfunctional family, or I've struggled with alcoholism, or I was really damaged by something that happened in my parents' marriage or in my upbringing, and they couldn't find God easily. They couldn't find spirituality within the confines of a sort of straight-laced middle-class church where people didn't express any of their vulnerability. And so sometimes at great cost to themselves, they launched themselves on a journey that involved engaging in therapy and in counseling and perhaps in a 12-step program, but also pursuing a variety of disciplines. And those people's spiritual lives have been, you know, greatly deepened and enriched by their willingness to search, and sometimes, as I say, at great cost to themselves.
Mm-hmm. If I could just extend that a little more, what I do find, though, is that certainly under those times of crisis, and we're doing work looking at this in the context of cancer, some individuals, though, perhaps have led very fulfilled lives, but it isn't until the time they get to a crisis like that where they find that their personal needs may not be met by some of the questions they have about basic beliefs. And they then are not necessarily being supported within their home church. And they're not finding those questions at that time as easy or legitimate to raise and need additional support to go out and at least legitimize even asking those questions that they may have.
Yes, that's absolutely a good point. That's what I've noticed from a number of people, too. As long as things were going well, the questions weren't coming up very deeply. The answers were all right out there. Religious beliefs and rituals they were familiar with were almost habitual. And then when the crisis came, they weren't terribly well prepared, and their congregation wasn't very helpful either. And at that point, my advice to pastors is often to think of themselves not as a kind of sole provider of religious services where people have to come to them or not get anything at all, but more as a referral service, and to recognize that there are people in therapy and in counseling and in small groups and at other churches and retreat centers and in crisis clinics and in the health professions that they can go to. And oftentimes they need to seek out and search in new places in order to find those answers they're looking for.
Well, thank you. I should let somebody else.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Let's go to another caller here. This is Bloomington, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I am halfway through my 87th year, sir, and I have never felt the need for any of that so-called spirituality. Do you have anything to give me?
Well, one thing I would say is that you are among about a quarter of the population. When we do surveys and we just ask kind of straightforward questions about how interesting spirituality may be or important it may have been, there are about...
What is your definition of spirituality?
Well,
what do you mean by that?
What we find when we ask people themselves to define it is a relationship to God, and they may define it in terms of, you know, higher power or transcendence. That's generally what, you know, we are a relatively religious society, and that's what people mean. So as I say, when we ask people and simply let them define for themselves what they mean by spirituality, about a quarter of the public says, no, you know, this just isn't important. So you're by no means alone. And
it wouldn't matter to me if I were.
Right. I understand that.
Thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. So we have someone calling from over at Parkland College here at line number two. Hello.
Yes. First, I need to start by saying that I had to run in from my car to get to the phone, so I hope my question wasn't dealt with while I wasn't able to hear.
Oh, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that.
I apologize. But two things that I wanted. One is more of an observation, and the second one is more of a question. Let me catch my breath.
Sure.
I noticed in the way that the guest responded to questions about people changing religions that he seemed to put changing from one Christian denomination to another on a par with changing from, say, being Jewish to Buddhist. And it always strikes me as very odd how in this society people will think of different Christian denominations as if they were different religions. I teach Islamic civilization here at Parkland, and I always have students who, when I ask them, you know, how many of you have grown up around people who practice a different religion from you, they will all raise their hands, but most of them, when they answer, they'll say, well, you know, I was raised Catholic and my neighbors were Baptist. And in this country, we seem to think that different Christian denominations are not part of the same religion. And so that was something that struck me as odd. I don't know if you want to comment on that, but the question actually is in finding people who are embracing new traditions, religious traditions from the ones they grew up with, whether it's changing denominations within a single religion or changing from one religion to another, do you have any idea how many or what sort of the percentage of people who are embracing a new religion because the new religion makes them feel better about themselves versus the number who are embracing a new religion because the new religion gives them more of a sense of connection to society, more of a sense of social mission? Most of what I've heard you talk about this morning seems to be more in the line of, well, you know, religion makes me feel good. That's why I want to be involved with it. So if you could please comment on those two things.
Yeah, thank you. Good questions. I can't break down in terms of percentages and give you a sense of how many people join a different religion because it makes them feel good or how many do it because it gives them opportunities to serve. I just don't know how that would break down numerically. But what I can tell you is that it's both, and it's often both for the same person. A lot of the research I do is qualitative and based on, you know, really lengthy, in-depth interviews with people. And as they talk about their search for something outside of their tradition, and here let me say that I do agree with you that it's a big difference whether they're switching from Baptist to Methodist or whether they're switching from Judaism to Buddhism. And in most cases, it's the former rather than the latter. But when they talk about that in depth, they will often say that they simply sense that something was missing in their religion of origin, and they will say, "Well, I wasn't even quite sure what it was, but then I decided to take a step. Maybe for a while, they just dropped out of any kind of affiliation, and then." Through a friend or moving to a neighborhood, found a new church or a new congregation of some kind. And often then it was the combination of both feeling that they were personally being ministered to through biblical preaching or through a prayer fellowship, whatever it might be, but then also finding opportunities to be of service and feeling that their gifts were being used, which in turn made them feel more worthwhile and more connected to the wider religious community and to God as well. So I think if I were advising churches, I certainly would discourage them from simply focusing on self-fulfillment, but also encourage them very strongly to think of opportunities, whether through the music program or a soup kitchen, serving on committees, whatever it might be, to be of service, because many people really are seeking those opportunities.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Just something that I wanted to ask you about that I think connects with maybe one of the points that the caller made. President Bush, one of the things that he has suggested is the possibility of providing government funds to faith-based organizations that are doing public service, community service kind of things. The folks at the Pew Center that do a lot of public opinion surveys, they went out and they asked people what they thought about this. And several things that I think are worth thinking about in the response. First of all, the fact that people said, well, we think this is a nice idea, but we have some reservations about how you might put this into practice. Further, people's when they were sort of pushed about, well, what kind of organizations would you be comfortable with getting this money? Majority of people said, well, Christian organizations, okay, Jewish organizations, okay, but you ask them about Muslim, Buddhist, Mormons, Scientologists, they said, oh, no, we got some problems with money going to those organizations. And to me, now I wonder, what does it tell us that, first of all, that people say Christians, Jews, okay, and these others they have some problems with, but that in the minds of a lot of these people, somehow Buddhism, Islam, the Mormons, who are Christians, and an organization like the Scientologists, somehow are all the same. They're all part of this religious other.
Well, this is, as you're suggesting, this is a very complicated debate that's going on right now. I've talked to John DiIulio, who's the White House a person in charge of faith-based and community initiatives, and just recently at Princeton, we also had the New Jersey Secretary of State come and talk about this issue. He happens to be also the pastor of the largest Black Baptist church in the state of New Jersey. And a couple of things that really stand out in this whole debate. One is that everybody advises very strongly that if a church or any kind of religious group is going to take money from the government, they should not, even though they are now permitted to do so, they should not take that money directly into the church's regular budget. They should protect themselves by setting up a separate 501c3 nonprofit organization and channel the money through that organization so that it is separate from the church's own finances, so that there's a wall of legal liability protection. And secondly, then, if it's a church, let's say, that believes that certain kinds of people should not be hired on staff, let's say that only Christians should be hired, or only heterosexual people should be hired, or only people of a certain background, that a church like that then should not expect to take government money. That churches, or whatever the religious organizations may be, should be willing to play by the rules of pluralism if they're going to get into this game at all. And then beyond that, the decision should be made entirely on the basis of effectiveness and accountability. And so in that case, if Scientology or the Nation of Islam or whatever it might be can provide a good program for foster parents or prison ministry or alcoholism or whatever it should be, then those organizations should be eligible and should receive government money just the same. And of course, that's not something that many people in the that some people in the wider public have thought through, and that's why something like this Pew survey does show that when people really are pushed on these issues, they begin to say, well, yeah, I hadn't thought about Scientology getting money. I had just thought about, you know, a good Christian church like I know. And so they're having second thoughts. And for that matter, in some of the research I've done, we've asked Christian clergy what they thought about the idea. Their initial response sometimes was, oh, well, this is a good thing. We can get government money and we can do more to help the needy. But then when they think about it a little bit longer, they say, well, you know, do we really want to get into this? Anytime we work with government, there's going to be red tape. There may be reporting procedures and accountability and financial things that we just don't want to get into. And so it's not clear to me at this point whether these faith-based initiatives are really going to have a widespread appeal in the public or whether they will remain, as they have been for the last 5 years, relatively small. Hmm.
We have very short on time. We have a couple of callers, and we'll try to get one or two in the time that's left. I'll take them in the order they came in, and next up is Urbana, line number 3. Hello.
Hi. I just want to follow up on an early caller, and also when you were talking about the shopping mall church. I'm just wondering about the form of the worship of the church and the nature of devotion. On the one hand, we can argue it's all the same whether you build a church with rock or you build it with aluminum alloy. It's the same idea, but somehow it just doesn't feel the same. You can't think of someone going on a year-long pilgrim to a holy site compared to someone driving an SUV downtown to a splendid church. Somehow that just feels very different. My other, I want to pop another question, it's more important, is how do we reconcile between believers and people who are just plainly atheist? Underneath, aren't we the same? What connect us? Are we all have the same kind divine within us? I mean, for that matter, what is the nature of divine? Thank you.
Well, thank you. Very complicated question. It's one that you know. All I can say is that we really don't know. I mean, how would we know, for example, if there is some divine need in everyone? We are taught within our religious traditions that there is. There are some neuropsychologists currently who are doing brain scan studies to see if they can identify spots in the brain that may suggest a kind of need for the divine. But we don't know. And in the meantime, we certainly need to take at face value what an atheist or someone who says they are simply not religiously inclined may say, which is that they don't feel that need, and understand those differences, and at the same time recognize that we all live in the same society, and we must, as far as citizens are concerned, respect those differences and not simply assume that only religious people somehow count, and those who have no religions are somehow second-class citizens. That's certainly what we would need to avoid.
I'm very sorry to say that we're going to have to stop just a little short here of our usual time this morning. I wish we could continue. It's certainly a subject that's worthy of a lot more conversation, and then perhaps in other days on other shows we'll be able to talk some more. But for the moment, we'll have to stop. Our guest, Robert Wuthnow, he is director of the Center for the Study of Religion at Princeton University. And we want to say thank you very much for being here. We appreciate it.